The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Bhattaka Swami on August 12, 1986 at Port Dickson, Malaysia. The class begins with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 15, Verse 7.
Two different practices of bhakti yoga, they become perfected. That's known as sadhana siddhi. And there are also the yogis who do the process of yoga, and they also achieve some kinds of perfections. They can eradicate the effect of our karma or the previous activity, and they can perform some miracles. It's that all these great souls, due to connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, they're able to, in this way, through their meditation, through their practice of yoga, they're able to achieve perfection. So what to speak of Krishna? Krishna is always above the effect of karma. He resides in his spiritual abode when he far beyond this material world. When he comes down into the material world, he is also beyond the purview of the material laws. He chooses who he wants to have as his parents, and he comes down when he wants, when he leaves, he goes. In the meantime, he's also not under the dictation of the material energy. So, when Krishna came 5,000 years ago, then he was openly coming as the Supreme Person. So therefore, sometimes to show example, he would follow some rules or regulations. Sometimes he would show that he is beyond rules and regulations and do something which no ordinary person could do. Just like he told his parents to stop worshipping the different demigods and simply worship Govardhan, being non-different from the Supreme Lord. So when he did that, the demigods became angry, and Lord Indra sent down a huge flood. You all know how he lifted up Giri Govardhan and protected all the devotees by lifting up the huge mountain on his little finger at the age of 7. Krishna, whether he's a small baby, or whether he's 7 years old, or whether he is 10 years old, or whatever age he may be, he has the same spiritual unlimited potency. Is it different from those in the material world who may achieve some perfection after practicing yoga? Krishna is always perfect. So Krishna came 500 years ago in disguise, or in a hidden way, in a covered way, so that to reveal himself to the world, because he came in the part or in the role as a devotee of himself. Just as a teacher sometimes shows the students, just like the driving teacher takes over the wheels and he shows this, you drive the car this way, that way, and then he says to the student, now you drive. So Lord Chaitanya came and showed, this is how to practice bhakti yoga, this is how to follow the principles of Bhagavad Gita. You see how I'm doing, now you do. But sometimes he'd do things which others could not do. But he generally disguised himself. But just as he came, of course there was a full moon day, and there was an eclipse that day. So in India, people are habituated to chanting Hari Bol and Hare Krishna during the time of the full moon eclipse. So Lord Chaitanya, when he appeared, everyone was chanting, because his mission was to give this chanting of Hare Krishna to the world. when he was a small baby. Normally, you know how babies, sometimes they cry. So the parents, they lift the baby up, rock the baby and pat, then gradually the baby falls asleep. But not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No matter what you did, he'd go on crying more and more. They didn't know how to get him to stop crying. Finally, someone started to chant Hare Krishna. Immediately, smiling, he'd stop crying. So then they said, oh, very nice. So then he stopped. Then they'd also stop chanting. Immediately start crying. So they had to continue. The fact they actually kept people there on rotation, constantly chanting. Because some ladies in the neighborhood, otherwise, as soon as you stop chanting, he'd start crying. So this way, he made the family constantly have 24-hour kirtan, except when he was asleep, and have the constant chanting of Hare Krishna. So, when Lord Chaitanya was just, about 2 years old or so, he's running around, he could run. Sometimes he would run out in the street and just go out, and the parents come get him, bring him back. But he had nice gold ornaments, gold earrings, gold necklace. Although his parents were brahmanas, but they got very good dakshin from their students, so they'd give their child, their beloved child, some nice ornaments. And Lord Chaitanya was, one day he ran out in the street, saying to people, then two thieves were there, and they looked at him, and they said, look it, this is our chance, look at those gold ornaments. He said, yes, this will be like taking candy from a baby. So they came up, and they said, hey, I'm your uncle. How are you, my little nephew? Come here, sit on my lap, I want to give you some sweets. You want to come home with? He said, then they had some sweet. They said, here, take some sweet. You come with us. We're your uncle. You come and visit our house. You'd like to come? We'll give you lots of sweetmeats. Okay. Lord Chaitanya said. So they picked up Lord Chaitanya and they started running. So playing with him all the time. And hey, dear friend, my dear nephew, or your dear uncle, how are you today? They're going to your uncle's house, like that, just talking. So then Lord Chaitanya, he went along with them, they put him on their shoulder, and they're running. The people were saying, who is that young boy going with this man? But there's so many people in Navadvip, literally millions of people, that nobody paid too much attention. So the whole time they're just thinking, how are we going to get Lord Chaitanya's gold? We're going to take away his gold. Then on the way, Lord Chaitanya says, I'm getting hungry. When are we going to get there? So then they got in some fruit or something and they kept running. And then this way they talked, they just put him down, gave him a little food for a second, they talked with each other, and put him back up again. Again they're running. In the meantime, Sachi Mata, Jagannath Misra, they were, where'd he go? Where's Nimai? Where's our baby? They went looking everywhere, they couldn't find him. They were in the street. So they're looking all over, they told the neighbors, everyone started looking, where did he go? He disappeared. In the meantime, Lord Chaitanya put his Mahamaya over these two thieves. As they're running and running and running, finally they came back and they ran right into Jagannath Mishra's house, courtyard, but they thought they were in their own house. They actually thought that now here we are, we got him. They put down the boy, ready to take his ornament. As soon as they left Lord Chaitanya off, then the Mahamaya cut. They looked, they saw, we're in the same place we started from. And then they saw the parents, they ran, oh, you brought our boy back! And they went and picked him up, you know. And then those two thieves ran for it. Oh my God. But they thought, oh, that he's such a nice gentleman, they came and brought our boy back, he's lost. They ran, you know. Then, because in case somebody, they just, you know, thieves are always afraid. Someone was saying that when, who was it yesterday was saying that Prabhupada, was on the tape, Prabhupada was going, and I was with some policemen, and he saw that there's some people running away. He said, why are those people are running? He said, you see, you're an honest person, so when you see the police, you don't feel anything. But when the criminals see the police, they run. They think maybe we're going after them. We don't have any You can't just arrest somebody for running. We have to have some evidence on them. But still, they see the police, and they, because they're criminals, they're running. So like that, these people, they didn't realize that nobody suspected that they stole Nimai Pandit. They stole the baby Nimai, baby Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they ran anyway. And they actually ran, as soon as they got away, they embraced each other and said, "We were saved by God. We were saved by the Devi. Saved us from getting caught." How they got back to the same place, that was a bit confusing for them. But they're overwhelmed that they got away without getting caught. They were really happy. So they thought God has saved us. So somehow they got this great fortune to be able to carry God on their shoulder. So but Krishna, even though, of course, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being Krishna, he was always in control the whole time. So this is the nature of the Lord, that he's always in control. But he's able to play the perfect part, that he's just a perfect child, perfect friend, perfect master, perfect lover, whichever, perfect husband, whatever part he plays, perfect. He is doing this on his own free will. He's not under the laws of karma. So if somebody takes shelter of Krishna, then automatically they also transcend the laws of the material world. If we chant Krishna's name, Nam Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnasuddha Nitya Muktoha Vinatuna Manamino. If Krishna and his name are not different, even accidentally chanting his name, one can get freed from sins from any birth. And even by imperfectly chanting, one can achieve liberation. By meditating on the impersonal Brahman for many, many, for a long time, still one is not able to eradicate the prarabdha karmas, or the primordial karma. But by chanting the holy name of Krishna, that prarabdha karma or primordial karma is destroyed. Narada Muni explained that when the end of Brahma's day came, everyone was brought back into the body of Vishnu, and all the conditioned souls became dormant. They lost their gross bodies, and the spirit simply went back into the body of the Mahavishnu. But there's some subtle prarabdha karmas, some subtle type of karmic etchings which are there on the soul, which even when you realize the Brahman are not eradicated. So when again the new creation began, all the souls again begin in their karma where they left off, from those fine codes. Like, we have DNA codes, these are karmic codes. So this is called the prarabdha karmic codes. But by chanting Hare Krishna, one's spiritual form is gradually becomes manifest, and these prarabdha karmas are wiped away. So this chanting of the name of Krishna is even more effective than being realized in the impersonal Brahman. So this gift is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we can chant the holy name of Krishna. We can achieve the shelter of Krishna very easily. Actually, the residents of Vrindavan, they're always chanting the names of Krishna. For them, it's a daily festival. You see, even though they are considered as all liberated souls, as Nitya Siddha, they're also always chanting the name of Krishna. In fact, Rupa Goswami explained in his Krishna Nama Ashtakam that the two forms, that Krishna exists in two forms. There's his Leela form, which is visible when he has his manifested pastimes and is performing various pastimes. And then there's the names which describe those pastimes, or his audible form as Sabda Brahman. So of the two, he considers that the form is the holy name, that he is more merciful. Because in the Vedas it says, if you worship the form of the deity in the temple and you commit some offense, to counteract that you should chant the holy name. That means that the name of Krishna is more merciful than the form of Krishna. Therefore, we should always remember the holy name and pray to the holy name to forgive us for our offenses. Because there's no one more merciful than the holy name. If you offend the deity, you can pray to the holy name to get forgiven. But if you offend Krishna, if you surrender to Vaishnava, then Krishna also will forgive you. But if you offend a Vaishnava, you have to go to the Vaishnava and beg forgiveness. Just like Dravasa Muni had to go to Ambarish Maharaj. So if you offend the holy name, you have to go to the holy name and request the holy name to kindly forgive you. So therefore we should surrender to the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Is there no more merciful form of the Lord? But we should be careful trying to avoid offenses to the holy name. But if someone is afraid, well, I shouldn't chant because I may commit an offense, but the only way to get rid of committing an offense is to go on chanting the holy name more and more. Because by chanting, that will get rid of the offense. So, by the mercy of the holy name, it is a special opportunity we have in this age of Kali that Krishna has come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has given us the holy name. This holy name is chanted by great liberated souls like Narada Muni. It's the life and soul of his Veena. We can take shelter of the holy name wherever we are, whatever we're doing, simply by remembering and chanting the holy name, we can remain in the transcendental platform. So now, even though Krishna, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes are only visible to a very rare few great liberated souls, but everyone can get the same opportunity of associating with the Lord by chanting his holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. How is everyone? Any question?
Yeah, it gets offensive. Committing offensive against the holy name is not. When you commit some offenses against the holy name, how do you do it? You don't get chanting the holy name.
Yeah, then you have to chant more.
Until they're going on, coming to
the government. By chanting, then eventually you'll get over the offenses.
You commit offenses to the Vaishnava.
You try to avoid the offenses. You go on chanting, but you try to avoid the offenses.
And they're chanting, they're
committing
some offenses against
the Vaishnava. You should try to avoid that. But to your strength to get over those offenses, to stop doing those offenses, that will come by chanting. One has to have a desire not to commit offense, and at the same time you chant Hare Krishna. Any other question? Maharaj is asking, when is prasad? Eternal time. To see they get the opportunity to be Krishna conscious in this lifetime so that they can get back to home, back to Godhead, and not again have to take another birth. There. Prabhupada considered them as very special children, not ordinary. That's the rule. You can chant it slow, you can chant it fast, you can chant it while walking, you can chant it while sitting. The point is you chant it and you hear. If somebody is mechanically chanting and not hearing, they won't get the effect. They have to hear. It's not that one has to chant it in some mechanical way, the same intonation. You can go on, we sing hundreds and thousands of tunes of Hare Krishna. Sometimes it's amazing how many new tunes come up. So there's no, that sense it's not a mechanical. Mechanical means it's simply machine-like. So it doesn't have to, if somebody is chanting like that, that's, may appear like that, but that's not recommended. You can go on chanting in different ways, but the main thing is to hear. To chant and to hear. The thing is that the pranayama, you can predict that what you do in a certain way, then this is going to happen. It's whether or not your mind is, in one sense, it's correct that both are predictable. What is the meaning of mechanical? Mechanical means you have to first do the hatha yoga, you have to do all the things, pranayam. Then you have to physically, you have to move the living force. It's all done through the direct willpower. That's why the certain kind of people that don't have faith or dependence or knowledge about the Supreme Lord. They like the process because the whole thing is under the control of their, or they appear, they think it's all under their own control. But when you're chanting, you don't know what is, there's nothing that, apart from chanting and hearing, the effects that are happening, the purification that's going on, this is out of your control. Only thing in your control is your chanting, and your listening, and you're bringing your mind back. But everything else is going on, that you cannot say how it's going on. But the pranayama yogi, he can tell you, now I move my atma from the heart down to the kundalini chakra, now it's going up to this chakra, that chakra, up to seven chakra, now I'm placing it between my eyes, now I'll go to indraloka, and he can go to indraloka. Everything is directly under his willpower. But the devotee is chanting Hare Krishna and putting himself under the care of Krishna. He goes far faster and with less difficulty than that yogi. Because that yogi, when he's trying to put his soul just between his eyes, if he gets a little distracted, if some apsara walks by with the ankle bells ringing, or if some distraction is there, then the soul, if it pops out of his eyeball, if it comes out of his ear, he'll die on the spot. He has to be thoroughly trained by his guru, who's a guru in yogic, and then to do this type of meditation, you have to, don't think you can do that sitting in the living room with the kids listening to the video in the next room, and they come in bouncing the ball, and you're there, you're just trying to put your soul up between the eyeballs, and they come in, hit you, the ball goes out. Doesn't work like that. They go in some hidden cave, they don't see anybody, nobody's around, they're deep in samadhi, there's no distraction. Doesn't take 10 minutes, they're working for years and years and years of meditation. Then finally when they get to that state, they're not also so easily disturbed. I mean, I'm dramatizing. But the idea, they don't just suddenly, 5 minutes, they sit down in the living room, they come right into it. No, they meditate for a long time, they're very serious. But we make a kind of a mockery of the whole thing now, they tell people, you meditate like this, you'll be able to achieve this highest perfection. They can get some little effect is there. But it's very slow and very tedious. But the whole thing, why they like it, is it's all under under their willpower, under their... So they feel, I'm the doer. Because of that, though, they have to suffer a lot. While the devotee, he considers that whatever advancement I'm making, it's all by the mercy of Krishna. Of course, you can predict that a person will go through these stages and make these advancements. There are different milestones along the way that a person can recognize which level I'm on. That's all there. It's not that it's not systematic. But the system is totally different. So those people who are a little proud, who are a little egocentric, that they think that I'm not going to depend on anyone else. They don't see that by depending on the Supreme Lord, that actually they're truly independent. Depending on yourself means you're depending on the fallible soldiers, the mind, the senses, intelligence. These can all fail one. They're not infallible. The histories of great yogis like Vishwamitra and others show that how the mind and the senses can often fail one. But the devotee who completely depends on Krishna through and by chanting his holy name, they're actually independent of all these material fallible soldiers. Because they're depending on Achyuta. Achyuta means the infallible. In the neophyte stage, when someone doesn't have, you see, this first stage is called Vidhi Marga. Vidhi Marga means following the rules and regulations. Those rules and regulations are performed by a neophyte in devotional service or bhakti yoga, even in a somewhat mechanical way, because they don't have a taste yet for spiritual life, they haven't got a deep or profound realization. So they're told, you rise in the morning, you attend this Mangal Arati, you do this type of sadhana or practice, you chant. So he's doing it, but he may not always get a complete realization from that. So the beginning stage is a little mechanical, because we are in a diseased condition, we're in a polluted condition where we haven't yet fully awakened to our full spiritual potential. So in the beginning, we perform these different practices of devotion according to certain set guidelines. And someone can say, well, those guidelines are somewhat mechanical. In the beginning, that is there because this is the nature that unless we do that and get purified, We cannot come up to the higher level. You see, but in the beginning, although they're slightly mechanical, very soon one comes up to what's known as a spontaneous level. First level is those rules and regulations become spontaneous. One starts to like those. He starts to get strength from them. And so one doesn't have to tell such a person, all right, you have to get up for the Mangalarti, you have to get up, chant your Hare Krishna. They automatically will do it, spontaneously. They want to do it. They enjoy doing it. So the first level, they may not get a lot of enjoyment from it. It's said in the Bhagavad Gita that spiritual life in the beginning, things in the sattva guna in the beginning, they seem bitter like poison. But in the end, they become sweet like nectar. But things that are in the mode of passion, they seem to be just nectar, like sweet like honey in the beginning. But in the end, they become bitter like poison. There are many examples, but... So then, in the beginning it may seem, oh, this or chanting, I'm not getting so much out of it. But if one goes on chanting for a month or two, even though it seems a little mechanical, after some time, when one starts to go higher and higher in devotional service, especially by chanting the names of Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Gadadhar, Sri Vasudevi, Gaur Bhaktivedanta, the special blessing they give is they help to take one above the mechanical platform. Although physically one may mechanically be following or following the system of devotion, known as Vidhi Marga, or it's another name for Vidhi Marga, Sadhana Bhakti, the practice of devotional service. And so we have a system called Krishna Sadhak, for those who are starting to do the practice, not chanting 8 rounds a day and practicing, doing these things, a person may not always get a tremendous ecstasy from that, although some might. But by doing it, you become purified. Chaito Dharapuna Marjanam, Lord Chaitanya stressed, we have to purify the consciousness. By purifying the consciousness, then the natural satchidananda, the natural happiness of performing devotional service becomes manifest. Then, next stage is spontaneously one will do these practices. Then the stage after that is known as Raganuga, where one mind is spontaneously attracted to Krishna, where spontaneously one, as soon as the Krishna katha or discussions about Krishna are there, the mind immediately gets locked. Just like as soon as there's some news broadcast or there's some sports something, some sports fan, their mind becomes fixed. Oh, what's that? Who won the cricket game? It's like this, we become attached to different material things. But nobody can keep their consciousness fixed on one thing because nothing materially is ultimately satisfying. So they always have to come up with newer things. But because Krishna is all attractive and he's himself always new, Navayovanamcha. Therefore, once you develop your taste for Krishna, you don't have to look anywhere else. Krishna himself is always new and fresh. So that stage of Raganuga Bhakti is the goal. When one is practicing Raganuga Bhakti, then from there they can come up to the platform of pure Krishna prema, or pure love for Krishna. And then one is considered to be totally liberated from the influence of the material world. So in the beginning stages, it may appear like slightly mechanical, but one can very quickly cross over those stages. I think that Ravi Lokshanak is in the beginning, you have to put on more force is needed to take off. Once you're in the air, then you don't have to have the engines going, isn't it? To take off, you need extra force needed. Maximum power. Once you're in the air, then you can vary it, you still fly. So just to get in the beginning, just because we're in illusion, because we're just attached to these material things, we don't have a taste for spiritual life because we're just like asleep. It'll wake us up to jeev jago, to bring up the spiritual force into play again. So in the beginning, we even if it's mechanical, we just do it. It's the order of Guru, it's our duty. So we do it in a sense of duty. I have to chant every day, I have to offer my food to Krishna, I have to do my devotional service. And by doing that, then one reaches a point where it becomes just almost automatic. Just a little bit of effort has to be. Finally, when you reach the perfectional stage, it's totally natural and there's no mechanical aspect to it at all.
Yes, sir. In the Bhagavatam, which I begin to feel a bit confused about, and I thought about it, is that Then when Kamsa heard the prophetic voice saying that the eighth son is going to kill, the eighth son of Vasudeva will be able to kill. The simplest thing he could have done was to separate the two, imprison them separately. So there will be no children born. But he seemed to put them together, waiting for the children to be born. That is one thing. And the other thing is, while they were imprisoned, Vasudeva's wife Rohini, who was living in Vrindavan, conceived Balaram. Because it was transferred from the womb of Jiva to the other side. So how would the common people have taken in Vrindavan? The husband is in prison in Mathura, but the wife is conceiving, is becoming pregnant in Vrindavan. This is like the point that I was thinking.
There were times that Vasudeva was let out of prison. Sometimes, you know, Kamsa varied. One time, the first time they said it was one time they let him out, and some they put him in. And sometimes he said, "Look at it, it's only the second child, it's not going to kill you." But then he said, "All right, let it live." Then his ministers told him, "No, but kill him anyway, who knows?" And then so, you know, Kamsa had his different moves. Whether sometimes Vasudeva was allowed visitors or not, but Devaki and him were more or less off and on in prison. But to what extent, we don't know that. We have to go into the whole history as to how strict that was. Because even from what we've seen in the Krishna book, now that off and on, Kamsa did vary in his moods. Sometimes he was driving the chariot for Devaki, sometimes he was trying to kill her. So he had his different moods. After all, Devaki was his sister. So sometimes he thought, well, he was convinced that my sister and brother-in-law live alright. So sometimes he was totally petrified, and then he was demoniac. That's why he said that the materialistic people, they may sometimes show some really good qualities of compassion and kindness and fairness and justice and so on. They may show a lot of good qualities. But then, as soon as they become convinced that their own sense gratification, their own personal interest is going to be infringed upon, then they can forget all kind of moral and just consideration, and they can do anything. That's why it said ultimately, a materialist, even though he has all good qualities, the ultimate issue, his good qualities are not worth anything. Because ultimately he can do anything. And he said, even a devotee, even if he has, some bad qualities in a devotee, but ultimately, even if a devotee sometimes has a mistake or makes has a fall down or different ways, but ultimately because the devotee is committed to surrender to Krishna, the ultimate issue, by Krishna's mercy, he'll overcome those difficulties and he'll be situated rightly. Just like Parikshit Maharaj, he put a dead snake on a faultless sage's neck, who was actually in samadhi. He didn't, but Parikshit maybe is just imitating, he's not treating me. Krishna put some mahamaya on him. So then he did this offense to that sage. Someone can say that, well, look at what kind of king is he? Kind of devotee is he? He got angry and thirsty and he just put the snake. So it said that, of course, when this happens, sometimes Krishna puts a devotee in difficulty. Sometimes it is a great devotee, or sometimes may this be a devotee that's not so great but needs to learn by making some mistakes. Sometimes you tell a child, don't do it, don't do it, don't. Sometimes you just have to give a whack on the hand so that they just realize, oh, this is something I shouldn't do. So sometimes Krishna, he gives a repeated warning. The guru warns that someone doesn't listen. They may also have to suffer sometimes to some reaction for what they're doing, which is not under the shelter of guru and Krishna. If you're working always under the shelter, then there's no problem. But if someone is misbehaving, sometimes they get swatted. But the thing is, then even if you think that, well, so that person, they have to reject him, or no, even that person has sometimes get some reaction or get some effect there, because they are a devotee, eventually Krishna will rightly situate them. For the materialists, even if for a while they act good, eventually they are going to lose everything because of their overbearing desire for simply enjoying sense gratification. So ultimately they'll sacrifice, even though for a while they may have some moral standard, That's why you can't depend on these world powers. They may say, let's have detente, let's have peace, let's reduce our we have now enough nuclear warheads to destroy each other 150 times over. Let's reduce it so we can only destroy each other 50 times over. You see, all this rhetoric, I mean, what is it? Even if you can destroy each other once over, it's more than enough. But they have enough nuclear warheads to destroy each other hundreds of times over. They calculate what one bomb can do. They have only need 20 bombs and you can practically destroy half of the both countries. And they have got hundreds and thousands of these warheads. So with multiple, each not one, but multiple and multiple, multiple. So they're talking about reducing a few. You can't depend, unless they really were God conscious, how can you depend? At any time, if they think that it's going against me, we're going to lose our position, if we don't act now, in the future, our world power is going to be lost, then everything will, so they'll do, they can do. If they see that communism is going too far, one side can do. If they see capitalism is going too far, other side can do. You can't depend on it, because ultimately, unless they're God conscious, there's no other moral consideration for a materialist than his own self-interest. For a devotee, even sometime he may have a fall down, but ultimately he sees that, well, I have to serve Krishna. So Krishna leads him on the right path. So like that, Kamsa being a total materialist, even though sometimes he did show some good quality, in the ultimate issue, he would act demanding. I mean, sometimes the demons, they also, they're not always that clever. They make mistakes like anybody else. The first thing would just kill his sister, then there's no children, there's no problem. Again, kill her. That's totally demanding. So that society was saying, how can you kill your sister? So like that society, how can you keep the husband, wife apart? It's as good as killing him. So they offered, we'll give you the eighth child. So then somehow or another he said, all right, you're going to give him to me.